So what do you do if you feel called to do something that no one else understands and that might even have great risk associated with it? We're going to talk about it in just a moment as we talk about the life of Joseph.
This is Nero Feliciano, and welcome to the All Things Life podcast. I'm a wife, a mom of four, and a cognitive psychotherapist. And I'm really excited to share these conversations and interviews with you that will hopefully help you live a healthier, fuller, and more peaceful life.
Well, happy holidays again, everyone. Thank you for joining me back on our second episode of our Advent season, Finding Contentment at Christmas, which can be really difficult sometimes, especially during this time of COVID. I know it's really a little bit odd because I know we've decorated our house and we've been watching Christmas movies and playing Christmas music, and it's almost like we're in this little Christmas bubble. But at the same time, we know the world around us is going through a lot right now. I'm seeing reports of hospitals at capacity. I have friends who are physicians in the city talking about the increase in patients admitted every day. And it's this kind of juxtaposition of these two worlds. I go back and forth between feeling very hopeful and joyful and also very uncertain about what's to come. And I know many of you, especially more and more of you parents who are getting those phone calls that your children have to quarantine and what that means, turning your life upside down in a moment, it can be very, very stressful. So I'm talking a little bit about contentment because, you know, sometimes we don't have control over happiness. Happiness is often based on the situation. And I know many of us going through 2020 have often had the thought, how can I be happy when all of these things are happening, when this has gone on in my life, when I have family members who are sick or we've lost loved ones during this time? How can I be happy given the circumstances? And what I'm going to tell you is you might not be happy, but we can all have an opportunity to find contentment and peace. And we're going to look at these amazing characters in the Christmas story to see how did they do it. I think when we look at their story, we have to start looking at them as normal human beings, just like we are, with the same fears, with the same anxieties, with maybe a little more faith than we had, maybe more supernatural occurrences than we have experienced in our life. But we share so much of the same. And that's what I wanted to talk about today. This week, I saw a patient and she was really struggling, as many people do who have seasonal depression or bipolar. She was struggling this time of year. And it had just gotten to the point where she was feeling the stigma of having the diagnosis of bipolar. And if you know anyone who's gone through this, it's actually very, very common. And she said to me very tearfully in the session, "I've been doing everything right. I'm just sick of being bipolar. I don't want to be bipolar anymore." And I had to stop her for a minute and I said to her, first of all, you are not bipolar. You are someone who has bipolar. And it's very different because when we have mental illness, it is not our identity. It does not need to define who we are. Yes, it is stigmatized in this society because we have not talked about it. But I can tell you this, given the texts and phone calls I get from friends and acquaintances and people who feel like they know me, we all have it. We all have some level of something in our families. And it is far more common than you think. And we had to switch that conversation to, no, who really are you? You're not your diagnosis. How does God see you? Thankfully, this patient is a person of faith. And she knows how God can take anything and use it for good. She knows that there was a reason this was allowed in her life because God was going to use it. And slowly through the conversation, she began to affirm herself of those things and the ways in which she's seen God do incredible things through her using the gifts that she had, which are so much more important, so much more powerful than the diagnosis of bipolar. So today I certainly want to talk about stigma. How do we do things that have great risk? How do we do things we feel called to do, especially if there may be a stigma associated with it? And that may be speaking up for something or someone in your family, many of us have children who have different learning issues, who are going through things right now. And how do we support them in a way that is meaningful and beneficial, that they know we are there for them, even if that means accepting a certain stigma that may be associated with it? Well, I think, as you know, if you heard the first episode, something about Mary, and I apologize for my titles if they're offensive to anyone, I couldn't resist this one today. Who's your daddy? We have a lot of daddy jokes in our family. My husband's name in my phone is Baby Daddy. It's been that way for the last, how old's Carolina? 7 years when I found out I was pregnant with the fourth. Unexpectedly, just like Mary. Not quite. But yeah, so anyway, there's my title. But we're talking about stigma because I think this whole story is full of people who overcame stigma, who overcame what society's perceptions of them were, to carry out this greater plan, to be brave, to be courageous, to be obedient, and to listen to what God was calling them to, because they knew that at the end it was going to be above all they could ask or imagine. They believed in the faithfulness and the goodness of God. So in that, there's a lot that we can take from it today. So let's take a look at Joseph. It is so easy to read this story at surface level, to look at Joseph and think he was chosen for this great purpose. We see him now as this major saint in the Catholic Church, exonerated, glorified the way that he is. And we often forget about his humanness in those moments as he was processing this information, that the young woman who he was about to marry was already with child in a very shame and honor-oriented culture. It was something that God had asked him to do that was completely unnatural. I mean, one, literally not being the natural father of this baby that she was carrying, but also something that carried with it incredible risk. I was thinking about this in my own life, and I was thinking, has God ever called me to do something that no one understood, that was highly criticized, that I struggled with? And the story that keeps coming back to my mind, I know I've talked about it on the podcast, was when I decided to change careers and leave medical school. And what you need to understand is, being first generation Sri Lankan American, the daughter of two doctors, I too grew up in a very much shame, honor, pride culture. It still is. Sri Lankans are so prideful. They are so proud of things that are good. And there is a lot of shame hiding in that culture. We don't talk about those things. And it was such a point of pride when my parents' oldest daughter, which is me, decided to become a doctor. That's something I wanted to do since I was 5 years old. And when I decided not to do it, not only was there such disappointment and resignation, it was not something that my parents really talked about. In fact, I think it's been not till this year where I've really heard my father, who's an amazing father, say to me, sincerely, I'm so proud of you, and heard the excitement in his voice. I think it took until this year. He was excited that I've given him four grandchildren, because that wouldn't have happened otherwise, probably. But it took him that long to get over it. And I remember when I made that decision, the amount of criticism I got from everywhere, from people who I don't even know, saying things like, I'm giving up my career and my dream for my husband's career, which, if you know me, you know that never would have happened if that was the only reason. I wish that I was that kind of wife, but I'm not. And in fact, when I met Ed and he was in the Navy and he was about to do his residency in orthopedics, he had done a one-year residency, which qualified him to do the job he did in the Navy. And I asked him, so are you going to do your residency in the Navy? And he said, I'm thinking about it. And I was like, hey, that's awesome. Good luck to you. Because I was not going to let his career interfere with mine. So had I not really had that confirmation from God to leave, I wouldn't have done it. But the amount of feedback and criticism I got, that I was making the wrong choice, that I was giving up all these years of work, because I actually put a lot of work into getting into med school. I went and did an extra year of college and a post-bac in molecular and cell bio. I went to Costa Rica and volunteered there for 6 months. There was a lot of work that went into it. And people who were witnessing that journey in my life, who had witnessed it, were very quick to tell me that I was making a mistake. And even after, I felt really doubtful. I actually don't think it was until I had my first child that I felt, okay, this is a good enough reason to be able to not hate my life and be present with my kids a little bit more. Not fully, because I still am not present fully, I have to say, but more than I would have been. I'm starting to see pieces come together. And every year there have been more pieces. But it was something that I made a choice to do for the main reason that God called me to do it. And I'll talk about that a little bit more later on. So when I was thinking about Joseph, let's look at the story and what he may have been feeling. He, at first, scholars believed he was an elderly man, which I don't really like that idea, given that Mary was only 13 to 15. You know, I have a daughter who's 14. Don't like to think about that. But then later on, researchers discover that he was probably only a couple years older than Mary at the time. So young, not kind of mature, wise type, super developed in his faith, but young. And we read in the Bible, when he heard the news, he wanted to quietly divorce Mary. That was his first decision, which was also very honorable because he wasn't going to publicly shame her like many people would have done. He knew that there was risk to her life if he had done that. He knew that already she was going to be an outcast with no possibility of ever marrying again. But had he married her, that also would have been his life. Essentially, he knew that people would either think for the entirety of his life that he had a wife who was unfaithful to him, who cheated on him, or that they had sex before they were married, which was a big no-no in that time. And because that baby would have come much sooner than 9 months after the wedding. I mean, people did calculations then like they do calculations now. So I was thinking, how did he feel when he heard that news? Was he angry? Was he disappointed? I'm sure there was some fear because, you know, even sometimes if that was the implication that they were together before they were married, that could have carried risk for his own life too. But what happened? So an angel came to him and said, nope, hold up, marry her. It was the Holy Spirit that did this. So whether or not you see an angel and you hear that information, you might wonder, okay, is this credible? Is this true? Can this happen? Because like this just didn't happen every day. It didn't happen. And even when Mary was given that message, she doubted it. She said to the angel, how can this be? Like, this is nuts, essentially. And the angel said to her, with God, all things are possible. And that is certainly a message that we can take from this Christmas story, because that truth is still true today. I was thinking about the culture that they lived in, and you made your choices based on honor and shame, and it was big if you didn't live up to them. I'm sure he was fully aware that as he made the decision to be obedient to God, to listen to that angel, that he was almost accepting the stigma that was going to be put on him by our society, by our culture. And I think about today, how much does the perceptions of other people shape our decisions to do things and do things in a certain way? I think about just with our kids and raising our kids and doing things because we're supposed to be doing them, and how much that causes us so much disconnection and exhaustion, just keeping up with the schedules, involving them in all the things that we feel like they need to have in their life in order so that they can be in a good place to play the next level sport or get into the next school that they want to, a better school. I mean, we think about that throughout the stages of their life. And it's not really based on what we feel like is good for them and healthy for them. Often, our choices are based on the perceptions of other people. I was just reading Jay Shetty's book, Think Like a Monk, which is a really interesting book, and a lot of overlaps just in terms of principles in the Bible, although he is Buddhist. And he opens the book talking about identity, and he's talking about this one scholar who he had heard who said, our identity is not based on our perceptions of ourselves. They're not based on the accurate perceptions of other people, what other people actually think of us. They're based on our perceptions of how other people perceive us. And that is so fascinating because that is a truth that I believe we see in psychology. If we apply that to the life of Joseph, If he did not have that firm, strong faith and knowledge of how God saw him, of what God thought about him, if his identity was based on the perceptions of what he thought other people were thinking of him, he would have been destroyed. He would have walked around in shame with the lowest self-esteem. But we have to know about Joseph. He was able to do what he did. One, because God obviously gave them the ability to do it. God provided for them in those moments. But also, his identity was rooted in his faith in God and his belief that God saw him a certain way. It was not based on the perceptions of other people. So it's amazing when we can adopt that identity, what we're able to do and overcome in our life, the way we find peace in hard times, the way we find contentment. So if you're struggling with that piece of it, this is an important story to go back to look at how these people found courage and did the things that God called them to do. I'm reading this great book right now, and it's been out for a few years, and I'm a big Tim Keller fan. He is the pastor, I think he's still the pastor, of Redeemer Presbyterian Church in New York City, which I went to for many, many years, starting in college, but an incredible teacher. And he wrote this book called Hidden Christmas, The Surprising Truth Behind the Birth of Christ. And I'm going to refer to this as we go on in this series, because there's a lot of wonderful truths in this book. And he was talking about this stigma. He was talking about Joseph's reputation. And he wrote, in terms of the parallel, that Joseph knew that he and Mary would be shamed, socially excluded, and rejected. And he goes on to write, if Jesus Christ comes into your life, you're going to kiss your stellar reputation goodbye. This is often so true as a person of faith, because we're called to values that are very different from the world's values. They're decisions we make that people don't understand. And often, because very much like this Christmas story, God asks us to do things in very backward, opposite ways, ways that do not always make sense to the world. They don't make sense to us. When I had gotten to that point in my life and felt like God was saying, okay, leave med school, or even just a couple of years ago, a year and a half ago, when God said, all right, time to slow down your practice. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, do you know how much work it took me to get here and then here, you know, years later, and you're asking me to walk away from that? It did not make sense to me. But that's when we go back to the goodness of God. And I think about how God chose this way for Jesus to be born. He knew there was going to be a stigma, but he chose it anyway because there was a purpose in it. And I think it's all these things that we're talking about that God is giving us through this story to know that there is a way through this, that God will use that for a purpose. If this way were easier, if there weren't this stigma, if there weren't these challenges, it would be so much easier to say, oh yeah, okay, this makes perfect sense. Beautiful story. They did it on their own. You know, yeah, okay, maybe the angel came, but everything else. But in this story, we know because of the stigma, because of the hardships, because of the challenges, the way they got through it had to be God. It had to be God. There was too much stacked against them. And I often think about that in my own life. When I see these situations happen that are really incredulous, that are really impossible, but God works it out in this beautiful way, I know this has to be God. It cannot be anything else. And not only does that strengthen my faith, not only does that develop my own identity in a different way, it connects me to God. It makes God very real and personable and tangible in ways that it wouldn't had it happened a different way. And that is one of the greatest gifts you can ever experience in this life. Trust me on that one. When you think about this story, you think about suffering. You think about a lifetime where Joseph's honor was questioned in this society that valued that over anything else. I think of how he'd probably have to explain that story to people who he knew. Just how, oh no, you know, this is God, the Holy Spirit conceived this baby. And now people were kind of looking at him like, okay, you are crazy. Like you, they may have questioned his sanity, his mental health, and then gone on believing exactly what they wanted to believe. I know that's true because I tried telling people with baby number four, this was an immaculate conception. And I saw those looks. I saw those looks. It didn't work for me. I think about suffering in this story, and as the story goes on, you see the extent to suffering. We're going to talk about that in this last episode, in episode number four as well, about suffering. Suffering for us in this part of the world is very different. We have kind of first world problems, and especially as people of faith, there's so much we take for granted. We can watch a worship service on TV. We can go to a place of worship and worship. But for many people, there are Christians all over the world. As soon as they label themselves as a Christian, they risk dying. And that, I think, you see in this story. By accepting this truth, by accepting this will that God had for their lives, they did risk dying. And this is true later on as well, because after the baby's born, an angel appears to Joseph and says, you have to leave. And what's so crazy about this story, and I didn't realize this until I was starting to look at the timeline of it, that angel appeared soon after the visit of the three magi, the three kings. So literally this woman had just had a baby on the ground in a stable, and God appears to Joseph in a dream saying, you need to leave because Herod wants to kill this child. Talk about, I mean, they felt like, okay, we just made it. Here, we couldn't find a place to stay. This woman is giving birth, starting to give birth on a donkey, because by the time she got to Bethlehem, she was in active labor. So any of you who had babies know that that doesn't happen in an instant. It takes time. So she was having contractions, which I think about after having four kids and thinking, oh my gosh, this woman on a donkey traveling. And then the uncertainty of, we don't even know where we're going to go. So talk about when I look at fear and perception of threat and pain, they're all tied together. The greater your fear, the greater the perceived threat, the greater the pain. So this woman was in a higher degree of pain than many of us who have contractions, who know that we are going to have a very safe place to have this baby with a doctor or a midwife and with people who we love around us who know what they're doing. This woman was going to have her husband, who in that time, as I said before in the first episode, no one ever had males in the room, not to mention they had never been together. Sexually. The Bible talks about how they had not come together sexually until after Jesus was born, and then they proceeded to have other kids. So the first time he was ever going to really see her without clothes on was as he was assisting the birth of their baby. I mean, this was not what they expected. This was not what they anticipated. So then we get to the part where he has this dream that all of a sudden, okay, they get to this point, they have the baby, they found a place. Let's go home. Let's see our family. Let's be with the people who we love, who can take care of us. Nope, we have to leave. We have to leave because our lives, the lives of this baby, are in danger. And they have to pick up and go 65 kilometers to Egypt, which is 30-something miles, and start a life for them. And many of us don't think about this. They were there for 3 years. They raised Jesus in Egypt for 3 years. Until the angel appeared to them, God spoke to them in another dream and told them to move again. We think about the inconveniences in our lives, the fact that we can't be with family right now, we can't hug our friends, we can't do the normal things that we want to do. That is all reflected in this story. It is a suddenly, it is a in a moment's notice, pick up and make a change and leave. It's a give up what you wanted, give up what you've expected, to do the thing that you're being called to do for whatever purpose that might be. And when I think about the things that we're having to do right now, I know that this is part of God's plan for each of us. And it might look different in all of our lives. And yes, it's really hard. And I think the way we approach those situations can make all the difference in the outcomes. I think about the story when Jesus went to the town and he had to leave because he said, I couldn't do any miracles here because there was so little faith. So essentially, it was the faith that enabled him to do many of the miracles in the places that he went. So what if we go through this time, and I believe this is a case in this Christmas story with Joseph, with Mary, they did things based on faith. They didn't say, this just sucks and, you know, okay, we're just going to do it because we don't have any other option. They did it, walking through it, saying God is faithful and he's good. And they offered him their faith in him at that time, which I believed unlocked opportunity in their lives and also in ours today. So if we can look at what we're going through in 2020 and especially this holidays, and you know, it's tough. I feel sad that, you know, we can't get together with my parents. And I know this is really small problems compared to what other people are going through to not have the same holiday traditions. But for many people, that is triggering some sadness. or even the fact that my kids may be homeschooling very soon full time, I can look at that and say, okay, I'm just going to do it because it is what it is. Or I can say, God, I know that you allowed this in my life for a purpose and for a reason. And not that you created it, but you allowed it because you saw there's something good that you could bring out of it. So I am going to trust you with it. I'm going to trust that you're going to bring good out of this. I'm trusting that you're using this for a purpose, not only in my lives, but in the lives of people around me, and that there is going to be a good outcome. That is offering faith. That is not doing something out of resignation, out of a contrite and depressed spirit, but out of belief that God is good and can use it. And I think that is the type of faith that we need, that Jesus talked about when he said, I need the faith to do the miracles. I think we need that faith to see that outcome. And sometimes and oftentimes, God is gracious to meet us in the halfway point where we're halfway faithful and halfway complaining. That's usually kind of my baseline normal. He's gracious, but it's that faith piece to walk through it with faith. I was watching the cartoon, the movie, the Christmas movie called The Star. And if you have little kids and you haven't seen this movie, but actually I watch it with my middle schoolers who love it too. I love it as an adult. It is so good. It's kind of an embellishment on the Christmas story, but all the really important pieces of it are there. And what I love is that they really portray, they capture the humanity, the humanness of Joseph and Mary. They capture them struggling with this choice. And there's one point where Joseph is just so frustrated and he's saying, why me? I know this is God's plan, but why did you do this to me? Why did you pick me for this? And I think so many of us during this time have asked that question in different ways. And Mary responds to him and says, we know that this is God's plan, but even though we know it is, it doesn't mean that it's not hard. Because we know as we're going through things that yes, the way of Jesus is not easy. It's filled with challenges. We see that in this story. We see that in our lives. Even the little donkey in this movie has a character. He's actually one of the main characters in the story, the little donkey that carried Mary. And it's so beautiful. And I've watched this movie twice now. Both times I've teared up. And I just don't know what's going on with me. I think it's perimenopausal hormones. Actually, this happened after I started having kids because I was not like a tearer upper ever. But it's happening often. And the donkey said, I thought if I followed the star, I would end up in the right place, but here I am. And we find out later in the movie that actually that was the right place, but it didn't feel like it to the donkey. And I think that's often how we feel when we are following God. We think, okay, we should be ending up in the right place. This should not be happening now because we have God in our lives. But what we know is that God is a God of the convoluted path. All of those pieces of the journey, they're intentional. They have purpose behind it, but we don't always see it till the end. But what this story is telling us is keep following the star. You're going to end up in the right place. It may not look like you're going to get there, but you are if you stay close to that light. There was one piece of this book, Hidden Christmas by Tim Keller, that I never really thought about. And that was the right of the father to name their child, which was an incredibly important right that the father had, and it exhibited dominance over the family and control over that child. It confirmed that father's authority. So from the very beginning, we see in two stories, both with the birth of John the Baptist and his father Zechariah, who wanted to name him something else. And when the angel told him, name him John, and Zechariah didn't want to do it, his tongue was silenced. He could not speak until the baby was born and he agreed to that name. And with Joseph, he didn't disagree with it, but we know that that right was taken away from him. And again, when we talk about stigma, he had the stigma of this whole situation. And also, oh yeah, and you didn't even get to name this child who is not really yours. So what does that mean? And how would that affect him? Again, the confusion, the frustration with him being human. But there's actually a really important lesson in that piece. And what Keller talks about is that Joseph gave up that right when the angel told Mary to call him Jesus. And Tim Keller says, if Jesus is in your life, you are not going to control him. Essentially, the angel was saying, you are not going to be the boss of him. He's actually going to be the boss of you because you've given up that right, especially in giving up the right to name him. And Keller says it's very similar in our life. When we invite Jesus into our life, it is not us that is going to have control any longer. And I know that's really scary in this culture where self-determination is very much an ideal that we have. But with Jesus, it is actually, you give up that control to him and you say to God, okay, I'm giving you the reins. I trust you. I trust that you know more than I do, that you have the wisdom that I don't have, that you will give it to me as I need it. But I'm ultimately making you the one in control. When I was reading Untamed by Glennon Doyle, there was so much about that book I loved. I love that she's a great writer, but she's big into self-determination and you being in control. And it may be her worldview, her spiritual views have changed over time. But that idea of self-denial is very much taboo in that book. You do not deny yourself. You're true to yourself. You're true to your what you want, what is going to make you happy. We are not a culture of self-denial. It's kind of a you do you culture that we live in. And we're told we should strive for that no matter who's in our path, who might become a casualty. But when I think about that culture that we're in, this culture and that value, I think about how happy has it really made us? You know, it has it really been worth it to live like that? And as a therapist, I can tell you it hasn't made us incredibly happy. And if so, not for very long. And it's not okay to leave people in the wake of that journey. We have to be a little bit more thoughtful and considerate of those people as well. I think that, and I think about this because I feel like God knows me better than I know myself because he created me and he knows the plans he has for me. He knows what's ahead for me. And I really firmly believe God wants more for me than I want for myself. He has a vision that's far greater for my life than I can imagine. And we see that in the scriptures. There's a verse, there's a promise of that in the scriptures that I keep talking about on this podcast in case you're sick of it. There is a verse in the Bible that says, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny himself. That's in Luke 9, and take up his cross and follow me. But then there's another verse in the Bible that talks about whoever's willing to lose his life for Jesus will find it. And that's how I see it. It's not a self-denial. It's actually more of a self-actualization. We are stepping into the plans and purposes that God has for us. As I always say it's not self-denial, but it's rather deciding to be directed by God. I think because the idea of self-denial has such negative connotations in our culture, that word doesn't work for us now like it did before. It is essentially what we're doing in some ways, but trusting that God knows the desires of our hearts and he knows the best desires that we could possibly have. And we're giving him access to all of it so that we can get there. We can figure out who we are. We can find our true selves and true contentment and happiness, and not what we think will make us happy, that will fulfill us for the moment, because it's what our culture is telling us we need or we should do or that we actually truly want. And I believe that was true for Joseph and Mary, because as they accepted this assignment, they were essentially committing social suicide, you know, giving up everything they thought they wanted that they could have had, especially Joseph, because Mary didn't really have a choice. She was pregnant, but Joseph had a choice and he made one that he knew ultimately would bring fulfillment and contentment because it was in obedience to God. And we see how God has honored them, not even just in that time, as we see how they were amazed and sitting in this wonderment as things begin to happen, as they witnessed who really they were becoming the parents of. But even today, there's no one in this world, I mean, some few people in this world that don't know who Mary and Joseph were. So I go back to that idea is when you choose to do the hard things, the brave things, the things that other people don't understand in this world, you're not giving up yourself or your identity to this unknown, ambiguous, random force of the universe. You are entrusting yourself with a personal, loving God who has shown up for you time and time again. And if you don't know what that's like, well, you and I need to talk, first of all. But you take that first step and trust him and ask him to show up. That's all you have to do is just ask him, show up for me in this area. Make yourself known to me. Make yourself real to me. And God will do that, especially if you haven't experienced that before. I feel like God does that more readily. Once you've been walking with God for a while, he's like, look, yo, you know what I can do. Time to grow up and just trust me a little bit more. This God knows what you need and how you actually need to grow into the person he created you to be, living up to your full potential. And what we see in this story, because we look at who God chose, these were not prominent people. He did not choose a way to bring glory to the king, this baby. First of all, it wouldn't have been a baby. According to that culture's values and standards, Christian values are backward to the world. So when you find that you give God the reins, the control, then you actually find a better, more whole, healed version of yourself, one that is rooted not necessarily in an easy life, but one that will have a grateful, content, meaningful one. That is the way that God works. It's very opposite. It's not what the world tells you you need to have meaning and fulfillment and value. It is a very different process to get to what true meaning really means spiritually. Now, this is not toxic positivity, just the ability to say, okay, everything's great, no matter how bad it is. We just have to believe God is good. I mean, I believe those things. I believe in those times we have to affirm that God is good. But when I look at how Mary and Joseph answered each other, how they answered the angels, they express their frustration. They express their bewilderment. Some of the Greek translations of the words that they used in those moments conveyed far more than we see in the English. They conveyed that there was a rationalizing, that they were trying to make logic sense of what happened. They were struggling and wrestling with these truths. We have to do that with the things that are hard before we get to a place where we can say, okay, you know what? Yes, I've worked this out, but I know at the end of the day, God is good. He's faithful. He's going to show up for me. He's going to meet me in these challenges, and I can look forward to things. It is a process. And as I said with Mary last week, she didn't right away respond to the angel and say, this is fantastic. This is amazing. She knew what was at risk, and she responded as an act of obedience. May it be unto me as God wills, as you have said. So that shows us that contentment is a choice. It is a choice to follow God when it's hard. It's a choice to follow God when everybody's doing something different. It is a choice to follow God when you're going to lose relationships, when you're going to lose status, when you're going to make choices that are hard. And I can tell you, especially in some of the areas that I'm working in, it's a little taboo to talk about God. But God, as I've done it, as I've stepped out in faith and made it very clear how I feel about God, I have not lost secular opportunities where people don't talk about God. In fact, they have multiplied in my life, which has been pretty amazing, especially when you're looking at corporate mental health and those opportunities that God has brought into my life where there's language and videos all over that talk about my faith, but it has not prevented people from hiring me into those opportunities. God gives back so much more than we could give to him. So contentment is a choice. Oftentimes it's not a compromise. We have to first come to a place of acceptance. And in this book that I'm writing, which by the way, stemmed out of this Christmas talk that I did years ago, acceptance is a piece that we have to embrace to get to contentment. That okay, I don't like this. It's hard, but it is what it is. And I'm going to accept that this is my reality right now. It's not a complacency. It's not a resignation. It's the ability to accept the reality that's in front of us and not fight it so that we don't create more resistance. We actually create resilience that then enables us to move through the process. I want to end with this story that I gave at another talk 1 year in April. It was a women's conference, and actually it was March 1st. And again, like I said, if you listen to the first episode, there tends to be huge, unprecedented blizzards when I'm about to give a talk to a lot of people. This has happened 3 or 4 times now, and it happened on this March 1st talk. And someday I'll tell you the story of that talk because it's a pretty extraordinary story. I do miss doing those big events where there are a lot of women in the room. I love the energy when people get together, especially over 200, 300, 600 strong, passionate women, because all of us have that in us somewhere. So I was walking into that conference, and I was going to go on later in that in the program. And I was walking in, I see this very elderly woman walk next to me with a walker. And she had come through a blizzard. It was snowing. I couldn't believe the women who got there that day, by the way. Snowing in a walker to get there. And I thought, there's a reason she's here. So I got up on stage, and I love when I have things planned, but God just tells me, nope, say something else. This happens quite often. It even happens when I'm recording this podcast sometimes. And I hope whatever that message is resonated with someone that was not planned. And I got up there and I said, where is that woman in a walker? I just felt like I had to point her out because she went through great lengths to get there. And she stood up with her walker and she waved her hand at me. And I said, I need to tell you that God has something for you today because you gave a lot to get here. And God is not going to let you leave without giving you more than he's given, than you've given to him. And I didn't know where that came from. I just said it in that moment. And I was told after that conference, weeks later, I got a text message from someone who said, I want to tell you the story about the woman in the walker. Because I had not heard anything. I actually ended up leaving right away that talk, getting on a plane, going to my sister-in-law's funeral. So I was kind of disconnected from the whole conference after that. So I got this text message and she said she came there struggling because she was having an issue in her family. She could not make a decision that involved her two daughters. And she came to that conference and it had been months and months of agonizing over this decision. And when she got there, there was a moment in the conference where she had just prayed and all of a sudden felt total clarity. She said, I know what I need to do. And she left. She made the decision and had such peace about it. And it worked out for her. Now, I don't really know the details around this decision, but I know that this was a really difficult thing that that woman was really wrestling with for months. And it involved people who were very dear to her. And she went there and she overcame whatever obstacles it was to be obedient to God, to pursue God, to seek God, to listen to God when things were hard. And God showed up for her and met her there. And I think that is the message, one of the many messages in this story. You pursue God when things get hard. God will show up for you and it is going to be okay. And I can't promise you it's going to be okay in this life, but the message of Christmas is that it doesn't end here. It doesn't end here. We are going to be restored, reunited perfectly with God one day, where all of these things will take on meaning and new meaning, and the things that held us down won't matter anymore. And that is the beauty of Christmas, of this gift of Christmas. So I hope this was helpful to you. I look forward to talking more about this story to you in two more episodes. Please share this with your friends if it was meaningful to you, because we need some hope in this Christmas especially. I hope you have a great week. Be well, live full, celebrate something that you have to celebrate in this season. It may look different. It may be a random act of kindness for someone else, buying somebody's coffee, and then you have that to celebrate that you were a part of that, creating someone else's joy. I'm a big believer in not every day may be good, but there's something good in every day. So find it this week. Have a great week, and I'll be back soon.
Thanks for listening today. And if you have a second, go on the Apple Podcast app and rate this podcast. I want to know what you liked and what you didn't like and what you want more of. And connect with me. I'd love to hear from you on any of my social media at Nero Feliciano, the Incidental Therapist on Facebook, and Nero Feliciano on Instagram. And you can also connect with me through my website, Nero Feliciano. So until the next time, have a great day, be well, and live full.